Meeting of Parliament, Friday 17th of March 2017, papers to be laid. The Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the report and audited accounts for the Gibraltar Broadcasting Corporation for the year ended the 31st of March 2009, 2010, 2011 and 2012.
Order to lie. Number 7, report in committee. 8, answer to all questions. We commence with question number 225, the Honourable Alan Clinton.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, can the government advise if all stallholders have been paid in respect of 2016 Walter Music Festival, and who is actually responsible for such payment?
I answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, some stallholders are not yet being paid because the stallholders need to produce an invoice certified by the event organizer at the ministry in order for payments to be issued. Some stallholders have not yet produced the invoices certified by the event organizers. Until an invoice is produced, payments will not be issued.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Honourable Minister for his reply. I must confess I'm surprised that there are still some payments outstanding. Can you perhaps clarify what he means by an invoice certified by the event organiser? My understanding was there was a prepaid system and that somehow it was carried electronically and that the money, I presume, would have been returned earlier to the stallholders by the event organiser, both of them going through government. Could you please explain what the procedure is and what exactly is this invoice to refer to? Because there are, as you have said, there are some people who have not yet had a payment. One of which did make representations to me, and it may be a case of just providing some information to the public, what do they need to do to expedite the matter. Thank you.
Well, first and foremost, Mr. Speaker, whichever stallholder has been there for more than a year definitely knows the system. And therefore, whichever stallholder might have been a new one from this year and could explain why they don't understand the system. The system is very simple. If you have a stall in CNS and you sell wares, they will then charge and produce the invoice of how much they have sold, which is then tallied to the amount which comes in. But until they present an invoice, until they present how much they of their wares have been sold through either the electronic system or whatever, the ministry will not pay them. But it's not only the stallholder that has to certify that, but it has to be the event organizer who are in touch with the people who do the bands and run the system. Because it's them that have to certify, because any stallholder could say they sold X or Y, but it has to be certified.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm grateful to the Minister. May I suggest, this is a matter of urgency, that to contact the event organizer, obviously it's changing this year, to contact the stallholder to put this matter to rest so that the books can be cleared in respect of any of their own children.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, it would be better with the stallholder that has made representation to the Honourable Member, contact the Ministry and we can explain everything that needs to be done.
Question number 226, the Honourable Alan Clinton. Alan Clinton, I beg your pardon.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a detailed breakdown of the £4,564,379.42 departmental expenditure under Head 40 Culture and Heritage over the recent ALDAP 30th of September 2016 and explain why this department has in 6 months already spent 70% of the annual budget of £6,498,000.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media and Youth and Sports.
Mr. Speaker, the figure of £4,564,379.42 accords precisely with the half-year information provided to the opposition. The Honourable Member must understand that departmental spending is not necessarily linear, especially in a ministry such as culture. Therefore, there is nothing exceptional to the figure given when compared to that to the overall estimate for the full year.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Honourable Minister for answer. He seems to have answered the second half of my question, and not the first half of my question. Is the Minister able to provide me a detailed breakdown of the figure I quoted, 4.5 million?
Mr. Speaker, this is a matter which has been ventilated on a number of occasions in the House. The Honourable Gentleman is talking about the 6 month figure which was provided to us when we were in opposition, and which we have, of course, therefore agreed to also provide for the members opposite, to enable them to have a heads up of how things are going towards the 31st of March. Mr. Speaker, no breakdown will be provided of that. There is an annual budget debate that deals with the figure, which is the figure which is set out in the estimate book. By the time we get to the 31st of March, we will have a forecast outturn for the current financial year, which will then be subject of the debate which we have traditionally in June or July. And that is when we'll get the opportunity to get breakdowns, when we'll get the opportunity to ask people questions on the subject. But what we cannot do, Mr. Speaker, is allow every question time in this House to turn into a mini budget debate, because if we do that, the House is going to come to a standstill. Mr. Speaker, I thank the Chief Minister for his intervention. Can I perhaps ask the Minister, is he confident that the annual budget of £6.4 million is sufficient for the requirements for the year?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Question number 227, the Honourable A.J. Hagan.
Mr. Speaker, sir. Following on from answers derived to question numbers 1 and 96 of both of 2017, can the Minister for Sport update this House in respect of the Assistant Resources Manager of the Grade 4 Coach vacancy within the Board of Sport and Leisure Authority?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the interviews that were scheduled to have had to be postponed as one of the candidates is unfortunately undergone surgery and will be on certified sick leave for the foreseeable future. Once this individual recovers and returns to work, the interviews will be conducted.
I understand that an individual can be on certified sick leave and therefore not fit for work, but if it's a condition that people think he's actually sort of hospitalized, because then it may be possible to attend an interview.
Mr. Speaker, as I said, unfortunately, undergone surgery. So the postponement will be while he's recovering from the surgery. And I can also give the Honourable Member the information that there are only two candidates. So therefore, we are waiting for this question to get a bit better so that they can then start the interview.
Yeah, that is something the speaker is, at least we now know the two funders, because the last month the minister said he was in the process, the interviews were in the process. And I know that medical conditions, do make the person not provide the best, so therefore we wish each other. And the disease that hasn't been well with a speedy recovery, and then maybe because I think we have a rough idea when that would happen, would be that, you know, this size of sort of the budget when it comes to us in the time when we provide the establishment on the starting level, that may also we may end up having a attending post there. I don't know what the minister can and what our information is that can serve on that.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I do not have the information as to when the candidate will be back, but I'm sure that the management of the DFLA will want to have the interviews as soon as is practically possible. And therefore, as soon as I'm sure that the candidate is at least fit to come to an interview, that candidate will be called in and they will conduct the interview to that person. So I couldn't commit myself to, but I'm sure that if the surgery of the type that is done, isn't life threatening or anything like that, then I'm sure it will be done very, very soon.
Given the answer the honourable member has received, there is no problem in his asking a question in May as to whether it has now, it by then, been possible to hold the interviews which have been unavoidably delayed. Okay?
You are correct, Mr. Speaker, let me say that, given that that April is disappeared in May, I just asked for an update. But it may have been helpful to know that there were two candidates, and I said that I was going to ask you to leave, Mr. Speaker. In the meantime, I suppose someone is sort of asking for this post so that work may continue as normal as possible.
Yes, sir.
Question number 228, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Sport provide details of the Victoria Stadium's football kit number one in respect of FIFA and UEFA certifications currently held, together with details of when these certifications were issued and when they are due for renewal?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the playing surface of the Victoria Stadium currently holds a FIFA Quality Pro certification. The certificate was issued on the 29th of June 2016 for a period of 12 months and as such is up for renewal on the 28th of June 2017.
And after I posed this question to Peter, as Mother Nature would have it, you know, the high wind has sort of played a bit of havoc on that surface. So I hope that sort of being tackled with and so on. Coming directly to the answer, Mr. Speaker, the Minister said that the FIFA certification was introduced on the 29th of June 2016. I know previously from my ministry we used to get the UEFA certification. Is there no longer a need for that because of the FIFA one, is that the perfect, or have you simply given up on the UEFA? Perhaps the Minister can enlighten us because otherwise we end up talking in anything else in our sporting events without really knowing the true state of play.
Mr. Speaker, as far as I understand it, the company that does the laboratory that does the testing used to do the testing for UEFA because we were members of UEFA. Now that we are members of FIFA, we just give you a fifth FIFA certification. I am assuming that they're both the same, and therefore it is now a FIFA certified quality certification. So whether it's FIFA or UEFA, it doesn't make much difference. And as to what the Honourable Member said about the inclement weather, I can inform the House that matches were closed last night and that we will also have maintenance people working as soon as, even though matches are being played with the wind that is what we currently have, that as soon as the wind blows down, the path which have been just behind the goal, which does not affect the matches, will be maintained and fixed so that everything will actually stand it.
Mr. Speaker,
Well, the reason why I pose this question is because those of us who attend this stadium on a regular basis, and I saw it, one real concern among team officials and so on, that there seems to be a bit of doubt about US side, not people, the US side sort of agreeing once again like last year for the pre-qualifier stages of the Champions League to be played. We had last year the games of Lincoln and Europa FC. And they were saying that, you know, it could only be rumored, and I suppose the minister may want to go back and look at this, but although the people were debating that the FA wasn't quite sort of straight away rather something that, but they did require some sort of very effective. I mean, given that there's no need to make money, Mr. Speaker, would it be in order just to put it in twice a minute for to take these next couple of months to look into it, and then we can update us in May, or if anything happens in between, we can always sort of communicate to me so that if there are nothing to be feared, then I can certainly join him in a sportsmanlike spirit to LA in the field as well.
Question number 237, the Honourable Alex Lennon.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide any statistics whatsoever to our visitors to the World War II Challenge from December 2011 to today?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. For financial year 2011-12, 24,074 visitors. For financial year 12-13, 21,978 visitors. 2013-14, 21,831 visitors. 2014-15, 23,205 visitors. 15-16, 27,955 visitors. And for the current soon to end financial year, up when including January 2017, 26,534 visitors. Clearly, we have to add February and March to the final count.
Mr. Speaker, I just asked the Minister, I posed the question back in December 2016 when I asked for statistics to the Echo Rock attraction during the last 5 years, and I was told that there was no statistics held by the government with regards to the attraction of the Echo Rock. And it's taken me a little bit actually having to go and visit the channels and see that there is a system in place where you purchase a ticket and you do have an actual plan on a ticket that says a particular number of things. As to why in December we were told that there was no statistics for any of the attractions, but I've actually described today that there are statistics in regards to at least one of the attractions.
No, but I think it's clear that, and I haven't got the benefit of hindsight in front of me. And we have corresponded before and conversed in this before. I think that what was said at the December meeting was that we weren't able to give particular breakdowns that had been requested because of the way in which the tickets are separated by cost rather than the other information that we have asked. I would need to check exactly what the answer was. I'm very glad to say that we have been able to extract this after a considerable amount of work. It may not be possible to do the same with the other sites. Remember, this is a relatively new site, it's run slightly differently to the others. I'm very happy to look into the actual detail of this now that he's asking a specific question. But I'm sure that there's an absolutely a perfect explanation, but I'm not sure. In any case, he should congratulate me for having been able to obtain information, and perhaps he says, I said, I wasn't able to get there.
Thank you, Speaker, absolutely. I did ask about visitors in December, and then I did ask for a breakdown between locals and tourists. So, within the local and tourists, you said you were unable to provide any statistics. But having asked the previous month on visitors, That's why I put the question. So, would it be reasonable to say, Mr. Speaker, that the minister undertakes to go back to his ministry and double check on that question that the tax cut for us given the authority was being denied?
I can all that. The Honourable Member keeps on asking every month different aspects of the same information. I don't really know what it is that he wants to know. I have to surmise it out of the question. I'd be very happy if he wrote to me or had a conversation with me telling me what does he want to get out of his answers. These are facts. There's nothing political, nobody's hiding anything. If he tells me what he wants out of the answers, then I will use my best endeavors to provide what he wants. But it's very difficult because one month I'm asked one great time, the other month I'm asked the other, and I really would like to be helpful, but I would like a bit more information, and certainly I will look into everything that I can.
Question number 238, the Honourable Aaron Simpson.
Mr. Speaker, can the government advise what priorities has the Reactivated Heritage Action Committee identified following its recent meeting?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the Reactivated Heritage Action Committee will mainly deal with issues that are current at the time, such as specific works with heritage implications, and will improve communication and coordination between the different stakeholders. Priorities in heritage will be set by my ministry in consultation with the soon to be created Heritage and Antiquities Advisory Council.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Honourable Minister's answer. They seem to give me a generic answer in terms of the Jackson Heritage Action Committee and various other groups. What I'm asking for is, have they identified any specific priorities?
Mr. Speaker, no, what I'm trying to say is that the HAC, the HLC, Heritage Action Committee, is an action committee. It will meet probably every month or every 2 months, or whenever there is an issue, a proposed development, perhaps necessary work, which may have heritage implications. Therefore, we will sit with all the representatives there. I think it's only 5 or 6, so definitely not quite an acute action committee to discuss with all the stakeholders what implications of heritage may be and what we may need to do to mitigate or to avoid this. So I cannot tell him the priorities. The priorities will be those that arise at that moment in time. This is not what we are going to create with the new Heritage and Antiquities Act, which is the Heritage and Antiquities Advisory Council, which, working with my ministry, will be setting up the priorities. This is an action committee which will deal with current issues, and therefore I cannot foresee what issues are going to be discussed at the HAC. It's not that kind of thing.
I'm grateful to the Minister for the answer. Perhaps you can narrow down the answer to what acute areas, if any, were identified at the last and not the first meeting, or the recent last meeting, that warranted action.
The last meeting was the first meeting where we discussed how we would run the committee and the sort of things that we would discuss. I would need to check on the minutes, but I don't think we discussed any specific issue. I would have to check the minutes. I think I've answered the question in the sense that it hasn't set any priorities. The priority will be the issue, the development, or the proposal, maybe a wall collapses and a monument. What do we do? How do we deal with it? It's that sort of thing. Priorities in heritage will be set by the ministry and the new advisory council, and we can look at all sorts of things that we want to do. But this is definitely, as the name described, an action committee. I cannot remember now, it was some weeks ago, what exactly we discussed at that committee. I can check the minutes at the later stage. But I just want to make a distinction. This is not a policy creation committee. This is an action committee responding to the needs at that given time. I think it's something that is good to have because we bring all the stakeholders together. We can discuss what can be done, what can't be done, what the consequences are, and sometimes by putting all our heads together, we may solve the problem to the benefit of others. It's that kind of committee.
Question number 239, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Speaker, for this question 449 of 2015, 8 of 2016, 372 of 2016, the Minister speaks in the Appropriation Bill and question 630 of 2016. Can the Minister provide an update on whether the technical specification for the sewage treatment plant is now understood and when government might be in a position to award a contract?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Speaker, the technical specifications for the new sewage treatment plant are understood, although we are still not in a position to award the contract.
Speaker, can the Honourable Minister explain why they are not in a position to award the contract if they now understand the technical specifications?
Because we're still considering how to go forward, and there are a wide range of issues, not just technical, that have to be considered. And we are currently considering these and in discussion before we take a decision.
And is the Minister in a position to describe some of those other issues which are not technical, which are perhaps holding the project up?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Other issues that the government are considering in relation to this particular project relating to the type of financing that the government is envisaging in order to build this project.
Speaker, I'm not able to provide further information to that I have done. These are obviously discussions which have to be confidential in nature until the award is made.
Mr. Speaker. I can understand that the details of any financing in relation to the project is confidential. But why is it confidential for the Honourable Minister to say that one of the issues, if that is the case, one of the issues concerns what type of financing the government is considering in relation to this project? But you know, the Honourable Government has made clear that it's a comfortable saying anymore. I'm surprised that he's been pressed because clearly, it's one that he's not comfortable saying more. Because there is a very good opportunity for the government and therefore for the people of Gibraltar. It must be that he's uncomfortable saying more because he's trying to put the government in a good position for the people of Gibraltar and for the government. And I'm surprised sometimes because we get so many questions in this house urging us to complete manifesto commitments, whilst at the same time we get so many statements in this house inviting us not to comply with our manifesto commitments because of the way that honourable members opposite say that they see a Gibraltar future. So perhaps the easiest thing might be we just turn up here one day and are left on our desk by a list that honourable members opposite might care to produce for us of those manifesto commitments that they would like us to pursue and those that they think that we shouldn't pursue. I assume this one might be on the list of things that they'd like us to do, given their question on it.
Because I know that the Honourable Gentleman jumps to his feet every single time that he feels uncomfortable with a question from the opposition, or alternatively, that he had become so omnipotent in his own mind that he really doesn't want any questions from the opposition side. But maybe he can answer this. Has the government made a decision as to how this project is going to be funded?
And to speak of, I don't know if any questions from the opposition. I wouldn't call meetings of the House every month. Because the Honourable Gentleman knows that outside the constitutional requirements to hold three meetings in a year where there isn't an election and two in a year where there is, I have no obligation to hold a meeting of the House every month. I allow them the opportunity to ask questions by signing a notice convening the House every month. So, again, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman's political correct gets the better of him. And I get up, Mr. Speaker, because he is the leader of the opposition, at least for now, on that side. Although I note that already there are some saying that they're eyeing his post. And I don't just mean the Honourable Lady and the rocket chair is another party. I mean, I've even heard it from the newly baptized deputy, that he wouldn't mind the job if it came his way. But if he is currently the leader of the political grouping on that side, and he was asked him by coming into his general, I, as the political leader of the grouping on this side, have got up to reply to him. he got up as a political leader opposite before I got up. So perhaps all of the references to omnipresence and all of the other references that I thought were the beginning of the usual slide into belligerence, and might apply more to anyone with me. I'd like to go back to the minister. Can I ask a very, very simple question? The waste treatment plant, the urban waste treatment plant, which I believe is what we're talking about, which in the budget only had £1,000 allocated to it, is this subject to a tender that you're actually looking at, or are you considering the wording of a future tender? Where are we in the process? Mr. Speaker, I suppose that on that side, it's now two people who get up in every question. Mr. Speaker, I think that the opposition is aware that this is a tender process that has now gone through most of the process, and there is now a preferred bidder, and that's where we are. It has gone through the tender process. It is obviously a very important project, and we have to get it absolutely right. But it's gone through the full tender process.
On that basis, Mr. Speaker, could you allow the Minister to just so that I know when perhaps to come back with a question and when he may be able to answer it. So, do you have any idea whatsoever, regarding the timeline for the award of the contract? Could it be a month from now, 3 months, 6 months, a year from now? Any idea whatsoever?
Speaker, I think the juncture we are at this point in time is difficult to say, and I would rather not. It could happen very quickly, it could happen less quickly, so I would rather not commit myself.
Question number 240, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, bearing in mind the continued poor water quality at Western Beach and the government's 2011 manifesto commitment to act immediately to ensure the sewage problem is dealt with, what activity has taken place since 2011 to rectify the situation?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, since this government entered into office, Western Beach has become the most frequently monitored beach in Gibraltar, with numerous samples taken on a weekly basis. Furthermore, the government has and continues to lobby the European Commission in order to find a permanent solution to the science-induced problem of sewage contamination of Western Beach. Four questions have been tabled by MEPs representing the southwest of England and Gibraltar since 2011, on the 30th of September 2014, again on the 26th of March 2015, on the 30th of November 2015, and the 12th of May 2016. As stated in my answer 329 of 2015, the latest position from the Commission was stated by Mr. Carmena Vela on behalf of the European Commission in a written answer on the 5th of May 2015, in which he confirmed that, and I quote, the Commission is aware of the possible pollution situation of the bathing site at Western Beach. He stated, the origin of such pollution is a diversion of a storm drain in the municipality of La Línea de la Concepción, discharging sewage near that beach. The Commission formally contacted the Spanish authorities to gather information, further information on the situation. End of quote. This is the first time that the Commission publicly accepted that the source of pollution lies in Spain. Our action has therefore secured this important development. The Department of Heritage, Environment and Climate Change is currently preparing to send an update of the latest data to the Commission, requesting that they put further pressure on the Spanish authorities.
Thank you, Minister, for that extensive answer. Would the Minister agree with me that while we continue to pump our own raw sewage into the sea at Europa Point, our case for Western Beach and the Spaniards effectively doing the same is severely weakened in anybody's eyes?
No, Mr. Speaker. especially with respect to the Honourable Gentleman, I've not heard a question that is more than the public interest of the voter put by a number of the opposition in the House since I've been elected to it in 2003. And Mr. Bassano says, in the 44 years that we have seen him. Mr. Speaker, let me be very clear. The position in relation to Gibraltar and Syria has been the case for many years. It was the case for our honourable members advocates of the UN government. It is unfortunately still the case in relation to us because of the complications that, that the honourable gentleman has alluded to. But to say that something spills into a strait which sees a lot of movement of water and which doesn't produce pollution to either Little Bay or Rosa Bay or to Sandy Bay or Catalan Bay or Eastern Beach, and therefore any Spanish speech, because all of them would be further away, somehow makes our case in respect of an area which is close to where sewage is deposited by Spain and makes it impossible to use a beach, and that somehow our case is affected, is to see a member of the opposition rise and flow into Spanish hands like I would never thought I would see in this house. But I'm seeing things in this house done by this opposition that I never expected to see Gibraltar and see unto other Gibraltar. It's really not unto the government, Mr. Speaker, it's unto all of us in Gibraltar.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, but it is utterly inexcusable that we could continue to be pumping raw sewage into Europa. Whether it affects the beach or not is a separate subject, isn't it? Which are perfectly entitled to us. And developers will see six, but you are linking one with another. And you have a specific question there, and you also try to do progressing this, and we will allow you all the way to do it in that respect. Raw sewage is raw sewage, and where that sewage lands is not necessarily neither here nor there. Any visitor to Europa will see what the raw sewage and the impact of it is at Europa, and indeed in the environment around Europa. But I do ask, in terms of the activity with respect to Western Beach, whether the government and whether the minister believes we are any closer to a solution to that problem than we were in 2011.
The Honourable Gentleman has not understood the import of his own question. And if he did, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Leader of the Opposition is suggesting from the 70 position that he did, that would be even worse. And, Mr. Speaker, it is absolutely true that the reason is not proven. So if somebody gets up and reasons out an argument, which is important for the community to understand, then that is not acceptable. And it would be wrong for anybody to suggest that simply because somebody says something and logically explains it, and it's important for the community to understand it, that would be something. But to get up here, Mr. Speaker, and to make an argument as logically flawed as the one that the Honourable Member has made is really not the reason. It is just to get up to speak a headline in a way that does Gibraltar a massive disservice and is against the public interest of Gibraltar. I will explain to him again. Sewage coming out of the northern part of Gibraltar, which has been the case for generations, and which was the case under the man they called the greatest Gibraltarian of all time, and whilst Mr. Beaton was in government of the GOP, cannot affect beaches in Spain. Because it does not affect beaches in Gibraltar, which are near, Mr. Speaker. And so, therefore, Mr. Speaker, if that is the case, how can there be an argument that we are somehow, in some way, therefore, affecting our case about what happens in the northwestern corner of Gibraltar, which is adjacent to Spain, and the sewage that comes out from there and affects our beaches. Now, nobody's going to know that we are working to stop the pumping of raw sewage into the sea. Nobody's going to also know it was our manifesto commitment. I believe it wasn't theirs. It was our manifesto. Now, in the circumstances, given that
They, as a party, have said repeatedly with the man who is their leader having been represented sitting next to the man who said it, that it was not a priority for them. When you figure you look at one side, you see that I recall from memory, but memory is something which is best checked for the transcript, but it was not a priority. And so, Mr. Speaker, frankly, to now have this suggestion made to us, slide in the face, not just of our record, but slide in the face of logic, and put an argument which, by their standards, forget that I've demonstrated it is illogical, but by their standards, goes against the board. Because if Obama gets up and says, this damages our case. Well, look, Mr. Speaker, the way that things have always been done in this house, not just in this house, in politics in Gibraltar, is that if you think that there is an issue which damages the case of the government and people of Gibraltar against Spain, you pick up the phone, you call the minister, who at the end of the day is a parliamentary colleague, and you say, John, I am concerned that this damages our case. You don't get up here in the glare of publicity with proceedings transmitted live on radio and on television, and say, "Pues Ignacio Landaluza, Mr. Speaker," which is what the honourable gentleman has done.
According to the point, we just had a question about the sewage treatment plant. Is the leader of the opposition offended that I am making an intervention now? Does he think that I don't have a right? Because if he is, if he does, then
not the question, right?
But I'm not, I am insightful, given the extent of what I've taken place, and there's just been a question of the sewage treatment plant, and now there is another one in Western Greece. I am entitled to intervene, am I not? But does the Honourable Leader of the Opposition think that I am not? But because I am, I have indicated that I'm reaching for you, you make a gesture indicative of your displeasure. Is that the case? I don't think it's the fact that I'm.
For the third time, may I answer the question?
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you've got the wrong end of the stick. I have to say yet again, there is absolutely no offence taken by me about your intervention, Mr. Speaker.
Right.
You're perfectly entitled to say whatever. But, Mr. Speaker, of course, if you ask me a question, I'm entitled to answer it. Now, the position is this. You asked the Honourable Mr. Hammond asked a question about the sewage treatment plant. I think, look, I've been out of government for many years, there is a link between a sewage treatment plant and sewage going into the Strait of the Middle. Is there not? And therefore, it would have been quite proper for you to deal with the matter then. I think it's unfortunate, to say the least, because it's become controversial, that you have linked it with the question of Western Beach, and I have allowed it. But I really don't think that there should go any further than this issue. If the Honourable Member wishes to ask a question at the next meeting of the House about the question of sewage at in the Strait, I will allow them that question. I will also allow the chief leader of the opposition now if he wishes to ask any supplementary. But I don't want any further exchanges on these because they are two separate questions.
And the
sewage in the Strait has got nothing to do with the sewage in Western Beach. But it has to do with the sewage treatment plan, and that is why you should have broken up for that.
Speaker, if I may, the reason I made that reference, and it's was the accusation that the Chief Minister made and we've got to come to them, is because in their own 2011 manifesto, they write, we will develop a sewage treatment plant, the absence of which has allowed La Linea to defend its own sewage landing at Western Beach by bringing it into the sea. So I have deployed precisely the same argument that they have deployed in their 2011 manifesto.
Yeah, but Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman should know better than to move 14 weapons because he's going to be thrown straight back at him when I smash this ball in his court. It's very simple. What we were saying was what La Linea had said. La Linea, Spain, had actually said in the context of the European proceedings that that is the position. The Honourable Gentleman is making the assertion for himself, and so therefore, with an oath, straight back at you.
The legal institution have a supplementary in this sense.
Mr. Speaker, I want to return back to the question of the complaint that you made to the European Commission.
and ask the Honourable Minister what action is the European Commission taking in relation to the sewage at Western Beach, other than the fact that it is cited responsibility by Spain for the sewage actually being not pumped but by that storm drain. I mean, what is going to happen? Because at the end of the day, what people want to know is not that the government has made the complaint and that the Commission has accepted the responsibility of Spain for this, but what is the Commission going to do in order to obviously have this stopped, which is a state of affairs that is completely and utterly unacceptable.
Mr. I may be able to take the answer to this. My understanding, and it's subject to confirmation, is that there may well be a subsequent answer to one term that may understand the bill, and that is that the Commission has actually said they are initiating legal proceedings or the work against Spain at that time, and they've bundled this particular case with other cases which are affecting other parts of the obviously the country of Spain, other parts of the Spanish coastline. So I think if there is a subsequent answer, and that answer points to legal action on behalf of the Commission. So we need to confirm this.
Question number 241, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, further to the motion passed in this House on 24th of November 2016, has the government prepared its management programme for the maintenance of the sanctuary?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, this is nearing completion. The Minister has an approximate date for the conclusion.
On this occasion, I am happy to say that it's just a couple of weeks away. I've seen the document this week, and I think it will be ready very, very soon. So hopefully by the next time we speak in Parliament.
Speaker, I may ask the Minister, if you recall last time, or a couple of years ago, was a tender to set the maintenance of the penalty. Do you intend to do that again, or is it going to be done in-house?
We're considering the option, Mr. Speaker. It very much depends on what the actual management program is to see how we can do it.
Question number 242, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Can government describe what technology is being used in the new power station to ensure that emissions are kept as low as is possible?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the new gas-fired power station will ensure that emissions are indeed kept as low as possible. The use of natural gas, never previously used for power generation purposes in water, will ensure that sulfur oxide emissions are almost zero, that in both carbon dioxide and nitrogen oxide emissions are much reduced, and lastly, that particulate matter emissions to the atmosphere become negligible. Furthermore, all six generating sets, not just the dual fuel sets, will incorporate the use of selective catalytic reactors to reduce nitrogen oxide emissions even further, a practice that is uncommon elsewhere in the world when combusting natural gas for electricity generation.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister then confirm that it is not the intention to use any kind of particulate remover as part of the power station, particularly when the power station, and I imagine it may occasionally have to, is running on diesel?
Mr. Speaker, the gas does not require particulate removal because the particulate matter in gas, as I say, is very, very close to zero. Nevertheless, there are various things that we're doing in order to ensure that particulate matter is virtually not emitted from the stack. There will, of course, be continuous real-time monitoring of all the different ingredients of the emission, so this will be able to be monitored very, very easily. that we are using a pretty high-performance diesel when, in the rare occasions when it would use diesel, and we hope that that would be virtually never, there would be a very high-quality diesel which would have pre-combustion centrifuging to remove any impurities before combustion, so the particulates are removed before the diesel is burnt, and so we are removing it, but the intention is that we should use diesel very, very rarely, and it's treated before, so it's very high quality and low particulate matter, and it's treated before burning.
But it is not the intention to instill any kind of post-combustion particulate removal for when and if the power station needs to run on diesel.
We are using the best available technology for the engine. As I say, there are different ways of treating particulate matter. If the honourable member is referring to electrostatic precipitators, these are not suitable for our type of engine, and therefore we will not be using those. But we will be using the best available technology, and in fact we are in discussion with the local NGOs on it, and they seem to be quite content with the methods that we are using.
Question number 243, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, can the government say on what basis Bouygues is able to award itself eco-strike status at the new power station, and what independent verification exists for this process?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, no sir, this should be addressed to Bouygues Energy and Cities.
Question number 244, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Has government received a response from the EU reference its complaint about the recent refinery failure?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
The Speaker, the government has received formal notification from the European Commission that the complaint has been registered and that it is being considered.
And Mr. Speaker, again, in order to inform you that when, as to when it may be appropriate to ask a follow-up question, do we know when any kind of further answer may be forthcoming in that respect?
I consulted my recruitment and deputy minister, who are more au fait with the procedures of the European Commission, and we suspect that it would be about 6 months or so. We can confirm how much we think normally takes, but that is our assessment at this point in time.
Question number 245, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan Naum.
Following various complaints from big stakeholders, can government confirm what measures it has in place to ensure that our beaches are being kept free from dog litter in the off-season months when owners are allowed to walk their dogs?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the RGP have an operational role in policing this, which is of course not under the control of my ministry. In addition, the litter wardens and officers from the Environmental Research and Protection Unit patrol the beaches at different times on a daily basis.
Mr. Speaker, I informed the Honourable Minister that I have received complaints from beach stakeholders, especially in the Eastern Beach, saying that the situation is pretty dire and it's very unpleasant. So, is the minister telling me that I should refer to the RGP, or after they take ownership for the state of affairs?
Because the Honourable Lady is always free to refer to the IGP, as indeed are those persons who are offended by the state in which dog owners will allow their dogs to leave the beach. As I said, that is just they have an operational role in this, and that's not under my control. But we also have the little wardens and the environmental protection officers who patrol there at different times, but clearly they cannot be there all the time, and I suspect that the problem happens when there's nobody there to keep an eye on it. And we have increased the number of patrols following complaints which have also come to me, and we hope that this will improve. Hopefully again, once the DNA process, which will come into effect very, very soon, dog owners have until the end of this month to record their dog's DNA. Hopefully, if anybody does allow their dog to foul and doesn't pick up, we will be able to identify them. So hopefully, next winter, we'll have a more favorable situation. But I'm very, very concerned about this, and I do receive complaints from people, and also from responsible dog owners who are offended at the fact that those who are less responsible give them a bad name. I will ask the team to redouble their efforts. Thank you.
Thank you for that answer. If I can just suggest, perhaps the situation is almost like quite innocent because dog owners leave their dogs to run wild, they're starting in off-season months, and they might not run after the dogs, depending on what they've done. So perhaps would the Ministry for the Environment be interested in putting up more signs to raise awareness for owners to be more on top, literally, of their dogs and go after them and make sure that they pick up after they do their business?
Mrs. Speaker, absolutely. Obviously now we'll be probably looking at next winter. Clearly, unfortunately, as we all know, signs in themselves don't solve the problem, which is why we have to introduce the DNA fingerprinting, but certainly this is something that we would be very happy to do.
Question number 246, the Honourable MD Hussain Naoum.
Following my question 768 of November 2016, has government made any changes yet to security arrangements at the entrances of Bayside and Westside schools?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, both secondary schools have enhanced security arrangements by strictly controlling access through particular entrances whilst increasing supervision on others. These improvements are particularly evident at Westside School, where access to the main vehicular and pedestrian thoroughfare is restricted and closely regulated. If I may ask, and I prefer to answer, Mr. Speaker, we recently, and perhaps illustrated further, the reception in Westside School has been moved forward to the front of the school, the southern side of the school, rather than inside the pathway. In the past, you had to go into the patio and then into reception. Now reception is on the front line, and that's already made a tremendous difference. And further work may be undertaken in the future.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate that answer, and I do recognize that Westside has seen an improvement. The Bayside one, though, however, I think still needs improvement, and I remain very concerned given its position in terms of also the front for the airport. And the fact that it is still accessible, I drive my son there every morning, and you know, in this day and age, it just takes one madman, and it's rather worrying. And I urge the government to take this as a matter of priority, please.
Certainly, Mr. Speaker, we're already more vigilant, as I said, and as I say, it is very likely that we'll be carrying out work in order to increase that further, and certainly before the next epidemic year.
We now move to question number 304, the Honourable Ellis Yaman.
Mr. Speaker, in the light of the Brexit referendum, has the government carried out any impact assessment on social change
support and tourism. If so, are they able to dispose of these reserves for possession and the plan to counteract any potential risk in these sectors?
Answer the Honourable the Deputy Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes. The government has carried out an impact assessment into the areas that the Honourable Member has raised in his question. The government are not able to disclose any such assessment for obvious reasons.
I can understand how the Deputy Chief Minister is taking us to disclose those assessments in this house. But would it be possible to have a confidential copy of those?
I'd be happy to brief them, remember, not to get a copy, but certainly to brief them on the situation.
Question number 305, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, does the government have a timeline for when the Nottingham School will be handed to them by the MOD, and is it still their intention to make it available to the public to see?
Answer, the Honourable the Deputy Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the handover of Nottingham School by the Ministry of Defence is dependent on the completion and commissioning of the new facility being built at Four Corners. It is anticipated that these works will be completed during the fourth quarter of 2017, with a handover therefore likely in January 2018. Our 2015 manifesto says that, and I quote, when the Nottingham School is handed back to the local government by the MOD, a school will be open to the public at no fee as part of the facilities available to bathers in the area of Camp Bay and Little Bay. This remains a policy of the government.
I have the honour to move that the House is now adjourned to Wednesday, Wednesday the 29th of March at 10:30 in the morning. 10:30 in the morning.
The House will now adjourn to Wednesday the 29th of this month at 10:30 in the morning.